Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 score scope. Yep, where is he? And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No. No. I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, got
you. Matt, well, you will be getting your book soon.
Left side three. Remy.
Got it!
Levine, turnaround jumper up.
Get it!
Onions! Baby onions! Kobe White, put him in the Hall of Fame.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your text, your voicemails, anything you got for us, 331-979-1369. Glad to be back here on Locked On Bulls. We got a special guest, Elias Schuster from Bulls Nation, Bleacher Nation, covering the Bulls and everything possible over at Bleacher Nation. Bleacher Nation does a great job of blogging. They're one of these new, I guess relatively new sites. Newish for the Bulls, at least, covering the Bulls over the last couple of seasons, but they've done a great job building up their community and their site over the last several years with the Cubs and with the Bears, and so now we get to talk to the man who covers the Bulls for Bleacher Nation. That's Elias Schuster. You can follow Elias Schuster on Twitter at Schuster underscore Elias, and follow Bleacher Nation's Bulls coverage at Bulls underscore Nation. Without further ado, let's check in with our guy, Elias Schuster.
I've never yanked guys.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome into Locked On Bulls for the first time making his debut. He covers the Chicago Bulls and the NBA for Bleacher Nation. If you aren't already, you should absolutely follow Bleacher Nation's Bulls page at BN underscore Bulls. They do great work. And you can follow him on Twitter at Schuster underscore Elias. He is Elias Schuster. Elias, welcome to the pod. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys for having me on. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to make my debut. I'm excited to talk some Bulls basketball. We've had it ripped from our cold quarantined hands for too long. So it's good to come on any kind of show and talk about this team.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. And you know, we'll get to some draft talk in a minute. But first, your thoughts on this, increasingly likely word we're getting from various league sources that the Christmas Day opening day plan might actually happen. The league kind of looking at the realistic picture of the unlikelihood of getting fans in the stands and trying to get their, you know, NBA calendar closer back to what it usually is. And that, you know, sometime in the next coming week, we might hear definitive word that the NBA's Board of Governors, the Players Association, they're all on the same page, and they're saying, okay, we're going to do a 72-game season, and we're going to start in late December. Were you surprised to hear that sudden change? Because we kept hearing things like, it might be January, it might be February, it might be even March. And are you optimistic that that this is the right course for the NBA?
Yeah, well, I was definitely surprised because, like you said, I mean, we kept seeing it get pushed further and further back. And honestly, that was the common theme that we saw when they were first trying to figure out their restart plan. Just a lot of pushback and kind of a delayed thought process. But so yes, to answer the question quickly is, yes, I'm definitely surprised that we're now talking about a December 22nd start. However, when you look a little bit deeper, you know, it's not surprising that the league's trying to push this. They kind of estimated the $500 million more they can make if they start around that holiday time. And we all know Christmas Day and just kind of that December 22nd that they're looking at until even like the middle of the first week of January. That's an important time for the NBA to showcase their top talent. So, you know, I'm not surprised at all that we're beginning to see this. Whether or not it happens, though, is a big question. You know, I think that you're going to get some pushback from the Players Association. I think there can be some convincing done because of the amount of money that they're set to make. But and also, you do have a lot of teams that haven't played and are probably eager to play. So I can totally understand if even the teams that were out of the bubble first or kind of earlier on are okay with that time frame because they want to get back on the court. I mean, what are you doing anyway right now? You know, I know off-season time is nice, but there's I'm sure these guys are eager to play basketball. There's not a lot else to do in the world right now. So the biggest problem I think will come from those those teams like the Lakers and Heat and Nuggets and Celtics, who just kind of wrapped up. But it's going to be a little bit of a back and forth, but they have to decide soon, right? I mean, we're looking at Friday is going to be an 8-week mark from Christmas Day. And that is when they wanted it in an 8-week time span. The NBPA wanted that 8-week time frame to get ready for the season. So they're going to have to make a decision sometime over the next couple of days if an early start like this is going to happen.
That's what blows my mind. And I think fans maybe tend to forget that, like, the players have to be notified well in advance and being 60 days before what the opening day is actually going to be. So, yeah, the idea that they've got to cram this in over the next 48 hours to still be on par with that Christmas Day opening day seems a little bit, I don't know, it seems rushed, and I don't know if they're going to be able to get it done. I'm crossing my fingers that they do get it done. But in terms of how this impacts the Bulls, and we'll get into the offseason stuff, and we'll get into some of the draft stuff as well. But first, Elias, I wanted to make sure that you and I don't have any beef, because I understand that you're a U of I grad, and I got to just tell you, man, I hate Illinois basketball. Having to watch them beat us as a number one seed in 2013 on a buzzer beating shot at U of I, like, that, those types of losses make me absolutely cringe. But I wanted to get your perspective and where you tell our listeners how you became a Bulls fan, what you thought about covering the Bulls coming from U of I, covering a college basketball team there, and I guess just where your Bulls fandom started and how things have been going over the past couple of seasons covering it for Bleacher Nation.
Yeah, for sure. Well, hopefully we don't have any beef. I'm not going to, you know, we'll try not to go at each other here, but yeah, you know, there's always that lingering beef there. In terms of my Bulls fandom, you know, I was somebody who just kind of, I grew up in the Chicagoland area. You know, Chicago sports team were always my thing. It's just kind of that basic, like, you know, you grow up here and my family had been here for a while, and you become fans of all these teams, and then basketball specifically as a sport was just one that, growing up, I played, I always loved, and the Bulls were always there for me. And so, being somebody who was a youngin during the Jordan years, but even too young to really remember and experience it, I didn't necessarily have the best Bulls teams growing up in my heyday of childhood. But then you get to that Derrick Rose era and that early 2010s, and of course that kind of reels you back in. But it's always been there for me. I mean, I've always been a Chicago sports fan, and I've always been a massive Bulls and basketball fan. So it was just easy and natural to fall into loving that team, even when they were horrid for a good stretch of time and a recent stretch of time, because it's just kind of, it's that hometown team and that hometown vibe. And I also just kind of love I just love kind of the Bulls brand, not what the front office has made it, but the Bulls brand of basketball. There's some fun stuff to it in the city. We can really rally around that team, and it's just kind of infectious when you're growing up. But you know, as for like my journey, I guess, ending up with Bleacher Nation and writing about the team, you know, I went to Illinois, as we've said, and I was a journalism major while I was there, and I was covering the Illinois basketball team, the Illinois football team, just Illinois sports. But yeah, I got it. I just kind of learned the ropes there of covering a team. But I think when going into the industry and going into sports media, I've always been a fan of sports, right? And I think a lot of sports media nowadays is turning toward, you know, not necessarily relying on that fandom, but recognizing that fandom within a lot of sports media people and being honest about it. And I think that's something that Bleacher Nation as a site does very, very well. You know, we're able to kind of show that we just love sports and we want to talk about it with you guys. And I think it's helpful, obviously, having that journalism background and understanding kind of how the sports media landscape works. But I wanted a career and job where I could be honest about the fact that I just love sports. I'm a big fan of them. I've been a big fan of Bulls, the Bulls all my life. And so that's how, you know, I confront covering this team. So yeah, it just kind of was, but after coming out of school, they had this opening, Bleacher Nation did. I applied for it. Didn't necessarily think I was going to get it, but I guess I proved myself to the big boss man, Brett Taylor. And now I've covered them for one full season, and I guess, can you call it a full season?
Yeah, right.
a very weird. Yeah, and you can't call it a full season. So I guess next season will be my first full season with Bleacher Nation covering the Bulls. But But yeah, you know, it's just, it's been a wild ride, and this is one hell of a first season to have to cover, that's for sure.
We'll get back to our conversation with Elias Schuster in just a second. Want to tell you guys about Built Bar. Built Bar has been an amazing, amazing, amazing product in my life, and it should be for you. We've been telling you guys about Built Bar for the past several months, been telling you about their 12 original flavors and their 6 brand new flavors. All bars covered in 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew. 6 of their new flavors included caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. They are fantastic for the keto diet. Built Bar is great for the healthy conscious guy or girl in your life. Lose and maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. I've been telling you about the one flavor that I absolutely love and I continuously buy is the peanut butter bar. It's got 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, and 5 grams of net carbs. It's the perfect way to kick off my day. I'm not a big breakfast fan. Don't normally like to eat the first few hours of the day. This is perfect to get my metabolism started and I don't have to feel guilty about something with a little bit of chocolatey taste. So check it out right now. Bars are low calorie, low in sugar, high in protein, and high in fiber. You can go to builtbar.com right now. Use the promo code locked on and you'll get 20% off your next order. That's use promo code locked on for 20% off at builtbar.com. Now back to our conversation with Elias Schuster.
You know, it's crazy because it didn't count as a full season. The Bulls only played, 65 games, I want to say. And it somehow also felt like a season and a half, you know, watching that train wreck under Boylan that just took forever. You know, watching the same train wreck night over night. You know, by the way, again, as a reminder to our listeners, if you aren't already, not only follow Elias on Twitter at @Schuster_Elias, but follow that Bleacher Nation Bulls page at @BN_Bulls. I can't tell you how many times over the last, you know, year or so where I've seen a tweet from that BN Bulls Twitter account and thought, like, yes, like, get out of my head. This is exactly the joke I was thinking of. This is exactly the feeling that I was feeling today as a Bulls fan. So you guys do a tremendous job with that. It's entertaining content and it's informative content. You know, you mentioned
that. Thank you for saying that.
Of course, absolutely. You mentioned, you know, the front office at some point in your previous answer. And it's crazy to think that, you know, as Bulls fans over the last several years, the thing that we've been most obsessed about is not the basketball on the floor, because that's been bad. But why is it bad? And leading our way all the way up to the, you know, the top of the ladder and just, you know, constantly pounding our fists, demanding change. The change finally came. So I'm curious what you thought about the perhaps most would say long overdue overhaul of the front office, the arrival of Arturis Karnišovas and Mark Eversley. And where do you stand right now in your level of trust and commitment to them? Because one of the things that I was so fascinated by seeing Bulls fans on Twitter and all over social media reacting to the gap between their hiring and Jim Boylan's firing, like, a portion of the fan base immediately lost faith in them after like a couple months on the job. We're like, why are they even here if they can't fire Jim Boylan? And I was telling people, give it time. He's going to get fired. They're just, you know, going by the book on this. They're doing it above board. So some people are saying, I need to see them execute things before I start putting my faith in them. And I'm still a pessimist when it comes to the Bulls getting to front office, you know, decisions correct. I am trying to put my faith in them right now because I like their resumes. I like the proof of their work and their previous stops. And it's just a nice change of mental framework to actually have faith in the Bulls front office after so many years of not having it. Where do you find yourself on that spectrum?
Yeah, well, I think it's so going back to just kind of the beginning of it, you know, it's impossible not to just love everything about this new front office because it is a new front office. I mean, at the end of the day, it wouldn't have honestly mattered who they hired unless it was, you know, Gar Forman in a mustache and John Paxson in a hat. Like, it just it wouldn't have mattered because whoever they were going to bring in was going to be immediately going to earn some fans within this franchise. But then you bring up a good point, right? Like, we as Bulls fans have kind of been trained to expect the worst and be kind of be masochists in a sense, because we followed this team for so long. And so that's why when they do not go and fire Jim Boylan right away, you know, you see plenty of fans turn on them and you see plenty of people start to question, you know, if this is just going to be the same old, same old. But fortunately, they went on a day. And I'll admit, I mean, I got a little frustrated with the timing as well. However, I kind of took more of the side that you did, Matt, where it was like, this has got to, I mean, you got to just give them a chance. You know, this is a weird time frame right now. We have no idea how much longer like this offseason is going to be for them. And honestly, if they need someone around to push some papers for them for a little while, like, yeah, you're going to keep them. You're still paying them technically. So whatever. And they did it. I think what they proved to people on that first day of technically the offseason for teams that did not make the playoffs by firing him was like, we do things by the books now, right? That was not the thing before. That was not the case before. You weren't used to kind of this structure and this kind of these reasonable decisions. And so I think what Arturas did by waiting was really make a statement and kind of show us who this new front office is. But I do trust them. I mean, I think that, and sometimes I think I fall back into that trap of being overly trustworthy right now because they are a new front office, like I mentioned, and that's just exciting as is. But personally, I just think that their resumes kind of speak for themselves. Specifically Arturas as a talent evaluator and as somebody who has helped kind of develop this franchise, I kind of was shocked that he didn't get more hype over this Nuggets run that they've had, because he did help create that team and he did help form that team. I know The Athletic released that NBA agents story, and within that story it was funny that they kind of mentioned a lot of Nuggets executives, but they didn't mention him. And I was just kind of thinking, he's somebody who clearly deserves some props here for what they've done. But yeah, I think the resume kind of speaks for itself, and I do trust them up until they give me a reason not to. And that's kind of how it is right now. I'm excited for the draft. I think their hiring of Billy Donovan showed us that they're kind of go-getters. They're gonna go out of their way to get things done, and they're also using this as a big market franchise that it is, right? I mean, before, the Bulls would have never done something like go out and get a guy like Billy Donovan. And this new front office did that, because I think coming from the outside, they know this brand that the Bulls carry. They know this name. They know what the city is. They know what the market is. And so they're kind of acting like that right off the bat. And I think that's exciting. And I think that's why we should have some strong faith in them moving forward, at least until they give us a reason not to. Maybe if they botch this draft pick, which still I wouldn't even hurt them too much, because this is a weird draft. But, you know, just have faith in them for now until they give us some reason not to.
Yeah, I think they do get some, they do actually even get some cushioning as far as like the first thing that I think Bulls fans can be very critical about is what they do with this draft pick and who they decide to draft and how they develop them. But even I think they're, like you had said, with this draft being so strange and there being so much volatility to it and so much unknown, that maybe the fan base would be willing to have a little bit of cushioning, say, all right, well, we'll give you one swing and miss. If that happens, I don't think the fans would necessarily react the way that they had to the past front office. Matt and I laughed here, and we still laugh about this, but I feel like to some extent the Bulls fan base as a whole, I call it BPST. Wow, I can't even say it. BPTSD, Bulls Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. It's where like we have gone through this cycle over and over and over again of just expecting negative things to happen, and we have to retrain ourselves not to apply that to this new front office, not to apply that to this new run that the Bulls are on, this new era of Bulls basketball. And even like to my own fault, I have two informal apologies on Twitter already to the new front office after freaking out about whether or not Jim Boylan was going to stay, whether or not Gar Forman was going to stay, and all of this. And we took a step back and realized they've got this under control. And so I'm with you. Like, until they prove me wrong, until they tell me, until they do something that makes me want to criticize or have a rightful way of criticizing them, I think there's no reason not to trust them. But I think that is a good point that you make, though, is being a fan who catches themselves being overly trustworthy of the fan base, or overly trustworthy of the front office, to the point where you're not questioning anything for the first couple of years. I don't think the Bulls fans should be like that, and I don't think the fan base necessarily will be like that. What I wanted to get your thoughts on before we go to any of the off-season moves, any of possible roster changes here, let's focus in a little bit on the draft. You guys have done an amazing job at Bleacher Nation of just covering all of your bases with the draft. And I'll be honest with you, check in with you guys regularly because you're posting communication with prospects that the Bulls have communicated with draft analysis, basically your one all of, hey, here's what the Bulls are doing and here's how they're prepping for the draft. Over the past several months of watching the draft, seeing where guys are going up and down in the draft order, is there anybody that you've really fallen in love with and hope the Bulls take? Is there a burning take on your mind that you wish the Bulls do on draft night?
Yeah, so I would say I was more into, so this draft in general, right, very complicated. I was more into I'm going to name a player for you, but I want to say that I was more into the idea of drafting someone like Coby White last year than I am in drafting a player that I'm about to name. However, I do like certain prospects in this pool. So for me, Denny Avdija is the guy, and I know that he's frustrated some people, and it's been this big kind of back and forth with Bulls fans, but I personally have loved him for several months now. Even during the Bulls season, I was kind of keeping tabs on him as a guy that I thought could really fit with what they need and also kind of be that high upside prospect that you want to draft. So for me at number four, I've always really liked him. And honestly, he's risen up boards because right before I assumed that they were going to get 7-8 range again, which would have been incredibly frustrating. But I thought that was going to be where they were at. And I thought he would have made sense there. Now they get number four and he has kind of moved up a little bit and people are perceiving him as a potential number four, or even some people like getting, you know, the third spot or something like that, which I don't see happening. But yeah, for me, Denny Avdija has been the guy that I think for the Bulls makes the most sense in the position that they're in. And I kind of like his all-around skill set. Some people worry about that master of none quality, which I can understand. His shooting numbers have also been concerning, which is always a red flag for certain people. But for me, I think that the shooting numbers aren't as big of a concern only because I think you should get a little bit of NBA training under your belt, but also he focused on that a lot during a little break that he had, over when he was playing in the Israeli Basketball League, came back, and he shot somewhere close to 40% over 3-point over like, you know, 7 or 8 games or so, whatever it was. So he's shown that he can have an improvement in that area. And he also, in terms of the other things that he possesses, I mean, he has those intangibles, which is just an incredibly hard worker and somebody who, as is shown by those shooting improvements, he's just going to go work on something and get better at it. But also, you know, he's just, I think he can be a great option for them at the wing moving forward. Otto Porter probably isn't going to be here for much longer. He makes sense for you know, as a potential future small forward option. I know some people think that he might be more of a power forward in this league because of his size, but I think that he could easily play small forward for them. He also kind of checks the playmaking box. He's a real, very solid passer for a guy his size. You know, he kind of looks to pass first always. So for me, he's the guy, and I don't necessarily, you know, I don't want to ramble too much on him, but I think he's the right guy that you should look at right now. And I also just think a wing player in general, I know that they're going to draft best player available and all that, but I just think a wing makes the most sense here. I like him. I like Isaac Okoro if they potentially traded down a little bit. And so that's my opinion personally. I just think that a wing option here would make plenty of sense. And I kind of more interested in their upside over some of the guard options, like a Haliburton or Hayes.
Well, I am one of those Denny skeptics, Elias. So I, you know, I will just say if he's the pick, if it ends up that he's there at four and AK takes him at four, I'll be okay with it. And I'll hope to be proven wrong. But I am one of those Denny skeptics right now. You mentioned that, like, yeah, he's got some playmaking ability for a guy his size, and I don't disagree with that, but that's not the same thing as saying he can be the lead playmaker, the lead guard on a team. And that is the other big part of the conversation that Bulls fans are having about the draft right now is, okay, well, this team clearly needs a wing. Otto Porter Jr. is not long for this world, and Hutch looks like a borderline at best prospect who's already like nearing 30 years old and is never healthy. So you got to address that position. But this team has not had a reliable go-to option at their lead guard position since Derrick Rose tore his ACL 8 years ago. So people are talking about a couple of things with this draft, which is, you know, do you try to get LaMelo? What if LaMelo falls to you? If Killian Hayes is there at four, do you take him? And then the other guy you mentioned, maybe AK looks to trade down and take Tyrese Haliburton, who probably would be available like towards the back end of the lottery selections. And then the other name there that's important is Coby White. And that's the other part of the conversation. Do you believe in Coby White and his future ability to be a lead playmaking guard in this league as opposed to just a microwave scorer. What are your thoughts on all of those factors that go into figuring out who's going to be the lead guard of this Bulls team next season?
All right, how about before I answer that, I'm going to throw a question back at you because I'm curious. Okay. Do you think that, you know, you look at, so you mentioned Coby White, and that's kind of one of the biggest reasons or issues to potentially go after a lead guard in this draft. So if do you think, one, it is best to go after a lead guard? It seems like you do. And two, what does that mean for Coby White? Where do you picture him as a future member of this team? And then attached to that, what happens with Zach LaVine? So I'm just curious real quick, what are your thoughts on that whole thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know who should answer that question? AK Eversley and Billy Donovan. That's not my job to figure out. I want them to take the best available talent in this draft, and I think it would be helpful if they add another prospective lead guard to the mix of players they have right now and then go to training camp and figure it the hell out.
Okay, so you're just, so in that sense, you're ready to just kind of add to that position specifically and figure out what works and then move on from the pieces that don't, which I think obviously for the type of team this is and for the roster that it is and for the wins that they've had, that makes plenty of sense. And again, I think at the end of the day, I bring up Denny as somebody that I like at the number four spot. But if they took a guard, if they went for that, I wouldn't mind it. Because like you said, this is the option here. Or the main thing you need to do here is acquire talent. And I don't care whatever way that comes. And if AK, as the strong talent evaluator he is, sees LaMelo, Killian, or Tyrese as the best option, then I'm going to be fine with it. I think the only problem is I'm a hardcore Coby White believer. I've always really liked him. And so that does worry. The only thing that worries me is what happens with him. How does he fit into things? And you know, how much of a chance do you give him at running point guard for this team next season? I want to see him get that real chance. I think if you end up drafting any of those guards that we mentioned, he doesn't really get that real chance. And again, I don't want to say that's a reason not to do it because you want to get the talent that you can get. But I think if he's sitting on the bench, you know, the front office has this new guy, and obviously Billy Donovan's going to help in this draft process. So whoever they draft is also going to be his guy, and they're going to want to get him on the court as soon as they can. So does Coby White get a real chance to be that point guard option? No. And I am intrigued to see whether or how well he can do at that spot, because I think he's always been a little bit better of a passer than he gets credit for. I think he was solid. Yes, he's always going to be more of a scoring guard. But we've seen in today's league, especially with the type of guards that we see today and the type of positionless play that we see today, that sometimes, you know, having those two scoring guards in the back can work. You would need other people to step up in areas to help facilitate. Maybe that comes at the wing. Maybe that even comes with somebody like Wendell Carter Jr., who he's not going to become your lead facilitator, but he should be somebody who can help you more in that category. But yeah, I think that's why this draft is so complicated, and specifically for the Bulls, because it's just you have honestly a lot of these intriguing talent pieces. I don't want to say you have so much talent because we don't know yet how talented they are, but you have all these pieces and you have to try to figure it out, and you want to make sure you pick the right guys. And so that's why, and I do think Coby White is one of their, you know, more intriguing number seven picks that they have, just because of his kind of his burst and his scoring ability. But also because he's so fast, and he's definitely someone you want to have out there. And that's why I wouldn't want to see him necessarily demoted to like the sixth man type of role. And so that's going to be very interesting. It's super hard to come up with the right answer to think about what's right. But that's why you do have to kind of we go back to that trust, right? You kind of just have to put the trust in this new front office and hope that whoever they draft, they can figure out how they fit into to things going forward. Because at the end of the day, we can't, as much as I love Coby White or any of these other players, I can't grow too attached to them, because chances are a bulk of these guys that we've come to know are going to be gone in a couple of years, and that's okay because it's going to lead to more wins.
You guys are both wrong. It's going to be LaMelo. That's the pick. It's LaMelo and nobody else. That is the pick. It's the guy nobody is talking about going to the Bulls. Have we not learned over the last three decisions?
What are you talking about? Bulls fans haven't shut up about LaMelo since
that's
March.
Bulls fan. That's Bulls fans.
Also, recently, we actually wrote about him at the site yesterday, and it's because the Ringer's Kevin O'Connor tabbed him to go to the Bulls at number four now. So there is a world where he's gone there. People have talked about it, for what it's worth. But
that's fine. But nobody connected to the Bulls. Nobody connected to the Bulls has said a damn word about LaMelo. What does that say about the three other moves AK has made and Mark Eversley has made over the past, 6 months? Every move they've made, they haven't said a word about it. Jim Boylan being fired, Gar Forman being canned, Jeff Tanaka being canned, going out and sneakily hiring Billy Donovan and courting him. Like, all of those moves were made underground, in secrecy, close to the vest. Like, that makes me think. And even listening to LaMelo being asked about, specifically about, like, hey, have you talked to the Bulls at all? Like, and he just goes, I don't know. I'm like, what kind of answer is that? So I don't leave out the possibility that the Bulls are interested in LaMelo.
They haven't talked to James Wiseman either, or they talked about James Wiseman or Obi Toppin at all. And you never know. I mean, what if those two guys come into the mix?
I mean, Jordan, are you just suggesting that LaMelo has a really bad poker face and actually did meet with the Bulls?
Yes, potentially. Like, he was asked about the Timberwolves, too. He's like, so what can you tell us about your conversations with the Timberwolves? And he basically goes, I don't know. I can't really say anything. I had a conversation with him. Like, his answers were so, like, very wishy-washy, like, you got nothing out of him. But I thought it was funny that he had said, when he was asked, like, did you have conversations with anybody out of the top three, including the Bulls? And he goes, I don't know. I'm like, okay.
Now, so, I do agree with you, though. I do think it's very possible that he has spoken to the Bulls. I think, honestly, there's a good chance that most of these top guys have actually spoken to Chicago and that AK told them not to tell anybody. And I think that's what several teams have done. So I agree with you in that sense. I think that there's a very real chance that LaMelo has already talked to them. I think there's a chance that they've already gone and worked out LaMelo. So that's just how, especially this draft, I think that's how it's going to work. So I would not be surprised if there's already been communication.
I guess the question is now, like, focusing, when we're talking about the draft, focusing more about the offseason and maybe the near future of this team over the next 2 years. And the question that we keep circling back to when we talk about any of these hypothetical trades or who the Bulls may draft and what the roster may look like is the first and foremost decision on Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine. I think those two guys are the most important to figure out what their future is here in Chicago. Lauri being one important piece because of contract extensions being pushed relatively soon. I mean, we play through one more season, he's got a qualifying offer, and they really need to figure out whether or not they want to extend him or not. And same thing with the Zach LaVine. He's got 2 years left on his deal. He clearly wants to win now, so what is the direct and immediate move for them as far as how they see this roster forming over the next several years and whether or not both of those guys are going to be here long term. Your opinion on Zach LaVine, do you feel like he's going to be a part of the future of what the Bulls are cooking up here? Do you feel like the best option for LaVine and the Bulls organization both is to just move on? And it doesn't have to end negatively either. I've been telling Bulls fans that just because the Bulls decide to incorporate him in trade talks and or decide to move him doesn't mean things ended badly here. It could be like, hey, we're not that close yet. We're not that close, and we know you want to win, and you don't have that much time left. You got another contract as well. Let's go send you to a place where we feel it's more fitting and you may have an actual chance to win. I think that's a scenario that can play out, but I want to get your thoughts. What do you think about Zach LaVine's game? Do you feel like he's a fit here long term, and or do you feel like dealing him might be the best move for the Bulls long term?
I think that a lot of that, and I hope this isn't some sort of cop-out answer, but I think that that's an answer that we'll have after a couple weeks into this season when we get a better idea of what you know this new front office is trying to do. Because I think that there's a world for both. There's a world where, you know, Zach LaVine is this talent that obviously he's this massive scoring threat. I think he should be an all-star at some point over these next couple of years. There's a good chance he should have been at one last season. Obviously, with a losing team, it's hard to make that mark. But just his natural scoring ability is enough to put him in that conversation and to make him one of the more elite shooting guards in this league. But it could go both ways. I could see a world where, you know, they do finally figure out a fit. It's hard to say whether any of these players could be a fit moving forward with the poor coaching that they've had the past couple of years and the bad management. I think that it's definitely hard to see exactly how you build around LaVine. We've come to think that you need that lead guard. That's why that's the draft conversation. That's been the conversation the past couple of years. You need somebody to help facilitate the ball and get the offense to open up a little bit, especially for him. And, you know, people kind of thought Satoransky was going to be that guy, and a lot of it goes to Satoransky playing poorly, but we didn't necessarily see a huge uptick in how LaVine performed because of Satoransky. So my question has always been, You know, is the answer going to be a lead guard? Like, how do we get this Levine, this version of Levine that does become one of the team's better players? And so it does make me wonder if that's ever going to happen. And so, and the thing is, you don't want to ask that question for too long. And we've kind of are, when we're starting to ask it for too long. And so, I do think that's when you have to start talking about looking into the trade market, because if we start asking this question about what is Levine, you know, as the season goes on after this season, then you got to be like, it's just time to move on from the guy, because at some point you're spending too much time figuring that out as opposed to figuring out the rest of your roster. So I do think no one on this team should be off the table. And I think he should, he's obviously the one that's going to net you the most in the trade market. And so if AK or Mark Eversley wants to pick up the phone and have that conversation around the league this offseason, I don't have a problem with that. And if they want to have it, you know, around the trade deadline this season, especially, I don't have a problem with that. So his fit for this team long-term will have to be decided by this front office and determined by, I think, fans as this beginning of the season goes on. It's hard to say with him though, you know, it's 6 years in the league. He's been a losing player all of his, you know, his entire career. You just got to wonder how much you put that on him versus how much you put that on his, on the circumstances that are around him. And I always have this list in my head of these change of scenery candidates, these players who just need a change of scenery to finally, you know, find the right fit for them. And he's definitely one of them. And I think Markkanen is another one of them. You know, those are two guys that maybe it's just never going to work in Chicago because of the past that they've had and how it's gone. And maybe that those are two guys that they are actually good players and Bulls fans were right about believing that they were, but it's just not going to work in this situation. So it's definitely going to be interesting. It's going to be a conversation that we're going to have to continue to have, and we're going to have to decide as it goes on. I think if you're going to pick between Markkanen and Levine, again, you got to have to wait and see, but probably take, if you're going to trade one of them, probably keep Markkanen for now because his ceiling, you still haven't seen what his ceiling can be, and then you move Levine because you can get more pieces for it.
The, you know, as we're talking about all of these core pieces and what AK does with them, Elias, you know, you're talking about Levine versus Markkanen, and obviously right now Levine is the most valuable piece they have as far as trade assets go. And Jordan and I roll our eyes all the time when people are hitting up our text line talking about trade hypotheticals, selling off Lowry or Wendell, and reminding people that if you were to do so now, you would be selling them at an all-time low of their value based on the seasons they just had. What do you think when it comes to this weird situation the Bulls are in, trying to figure out if Lowry Wendell can be the front court of the future, knowing that Wendell has expressed vocally even during the season after some tough nights that he feels more comfortable and confident playing the four than the five. He's certainly undersized even in today's NBA to play the center position, but he does have the defensive skill set to do it. Which guy do you want to see have a big positive adjustment and bounce back year under the tutelage of Billy Donovan? Which one do you think is more likely to have that big bounce back, and which one do you want to see really blossom? Some people are Lowry believers. Some people are Wendell believers. We were talking about playmaking earlier in this conversation, and you look at what Nikola Jokic does for that Denver Nuggets team that AK assembled, and yes, it's not the most common thing in the league to see your center be a main distributor and a guy, you know, putting up triple doubles with assists every night or, you know, several nights, you know, throughout the month. But Wendell has potential there. Wendell appears to be underutilized with his playmaking and passing ability, but he was basically just underutilized across the board all season long. He didn't even look at the basket when the Bulls were on offense. And Lowry was stuffed in the corner and turned into a spot-up shooter. So which one of those guys do you think is key for Donovan to really, you know, break open their game and see if they can be a piece of this team going forward?
Yeah, so I think obviously I'd like to see both of them have this sort of breakout. But when it comes down to which player I think will excel more under Donovan and could become an even more key piece moving forward, I think it would be Wendell. I think that he's, and I think that's kind of been a popular opinion I've seen, especially around people who really like basketball or just like really like follow more of the general fan, I think, wants to go after Markkanen, and then these like basketball junkies really like Wendell, and both sides have like a good reason to like both. And the argument is, I'm not saying one argument is necessarily better than the other. It's just for me, I think that Wendell has all these qualities that you look for in today's modern NBA. And you say he's undersized at center, which is absolutely true. And I know that he's expressed a desire to play power forward in the past, but at the same time, I think it's just because he hasn't been in the right system yet. And he can easily be an NBA center. I mean, we look at guys like Bam Adebayo and we look at some of these undersized guys in today's league. It's fine to, you can do that, especially when you have the length that he has. Like you said, defensively, he's more than capable of doing it. You just have to be more creative on offense. So I think he's definitely a center moving forward. I don't think he's a power forward. And I think that Billy Donovan will make him believe that. And I think that Billy Donovan will also show him that he's more than capable of you know, finding his game offensively in that center position. It, you know, what's interesting about Wendell is the fact that I think he was hurt most the past couple of years, especially last year under Boylan, just because they barely used him, right? I mean, he does have – people always talk about his defensive capabilities, but we forget that he's a pretty solid offensive player. He's extremely efficient at Duke when he was there. Yes, his three-point stroke isn't necessarily great, but he can definitely hit them. I mean, he shot 41% at Duke. He's a fine player for along the perimeter, and I think that he can help this team out a lot offensively. And it's crazy to me that the offense was as bad as it was last season, and they never turned to him or tried to get him more involved. I remember I wrote about him, I think, a little earlier. I don't know if this was during the offseason or during the season or whatever it was, but I looked into, you know, his usage rating with the Bulls compared to, and in college is always going to be a little bit more usually because these guys are the guy at their college and they're going to be used more. But I compared him to his draft class on their teams these past first couple seasons and how their usage rating was. And, you know, we remember he was the seventh pick. It was DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley, Jaren Jackson Jr., Trae Young. Who else did you have? Mo Bamba, him. And then like he had Colin Sexton was in the mix. And a couple of these other guys were there. And he was in that in the lottery. I think out of that draft class, he was his usage rating has been the third lowest. Like his team has used him the least out of like any of the lottery picks that went, or the third least out of any lottery picks that went. And I think that just it kind of goes to show how screwed over he's been in a lot of ways, because he can be this helpful player, and the team hasn't invested much time in trying to figure out how that works. And part of that is you have LaVine, and you have Markkanen. But especially last season, Boylan was just like, he's our defensive guy and he's not going to do much else. And so he has the most potential to take a big leap because he just can finally be used on that end and show us what he's capable of. And we know we've seen plenty of video and crap. He's been working on his offensive game during the offseason. So we'll see how it goes. But I just think he just needs the ball more. You know, if he gets the ball more, we'll see what he's capable of, and we'll see that he can be a very helpful hand on the offensive end.
Nothing like those Lifetime videos to get you super hyped about guys you haven't seen perform well, right? Like him and Melo. Melo's a Hall of Fame Lifetime gym guy. But the one thing I wanted to say on Carter, and we'll get you out of here in a second. I got another question for you. But the one thing I wanted to say on Carter that I feel like isn't brought up enough is the mere fact that he was in foul trouble so much in the 2 years that he played. Like, every single game, it felt like Carter had three fouls going into halftime. And for a big man who doesn't have really any help around him defensively, that can wane on a guy. When constantly you're going out there, you're not involved on the offensive end, and then you get zero help on the defensive side, I can understand why he's so frustrated with that. And I even saw, to some extent, like Daniel Gafford, when he was used in situations over 20 minutes, the dude was fouling out at a ridiculous rate. He was getting calls left and right on him because he had no help on defense. So I'm crossing my fingers that the Bulls figure out a way to get some of these guys that played such terrible defense last year to buy back into that and to try to help Carter stay on the floor longer. And that's something that Carter, I think, is going to have to do himself too, is find positions and find plays where you don't necessarily need to take a foul and draw a foul early on in a game. And that's just going to be part of the development on top of his offense. But I think keeping him on the floor is the most important part, because go back and look at it, and look, the refs didn't do him any favors either. I pulled a clip just from his rookie year. The first half of his rookie year, there is 47 fouls called on him in the first half by refs that half of them he's not even involved in the play, and he's getting a foul called on him. So I think being able to be helped out too with the refs not calling absurd fouls on him as well, keeping him on the floor longer is only going to help his confidence as well. The last thing I got for you, The last, very, very last thing I've got for you is some of the moves the Bulls are going to make this offseason. Is there one free agent out there right now that you feel like can help this team? If the Bulls decide to just stand pat with everything that they've got right now, but they've got that mid-level exception to spend on, is there one free agent this offseason that the Bulls should target that would be a good piece to see what this team will do in 2021, I should say?
It's a hard question because obviously they don't, there's not anyone that I think they're going to be able to get that's going to make this insane impact because they don't, they just don't have enough spending power for it. At the same time though, there are definitely a couple veteran players that you can get into the mix that, that are going to help. I think that there's obviously been all that conversation about Derrick Jones Jr. And he's the most kind of popular name we've seen thrown around to the Bulls. I definitely think he would help. I actually think he's going to be out of their price range to the point where, some other team like Atlanta or, you know, maybe the Hornets or something, they're more willing to kind of ante up and give him more money. So I don't see that one happening, but a player like him would definitely help. Some people have liked to throw Jay Crowder in there. He's another Heat forward that is probably going to be out of their price range, but I think a guy like him would definitely help a lot. I wouldn't mind somebody maybe like Mo Harkless. You know, is he a guy that could come in and help a little bit at that position? I actually also, another name that's been popular to throw with them has been a guy like JaMychal Green. Again, none of these names are very exciting, but I think a guy like maybe JaMychal Green could help them a little bit in certain areas. So the moral of the story is no, there isn't really a single free agent that I think is going to come in and do much. And also you're going to have to decide what area you look at in free agency based off of this draft. You know, if you do draft a lead guard, then, you know, you're not going to look at that in free agency, obviously, and vice versa for at the wing. So, cause there's also a couple of veteran guards that could be interesting to bring in. And I know you have Thomas Satoransky, but, there's a world where he and Thaddeus Young maybe are on the trade market. So it's hard to say. 2021 is going to be the real interesting one. I think if they acquire anyone that makes them more interesting in 2021 free agency, it'll probably be via the trade market during the season. You know, maybe they get an expiring or two, but somebody who's kind of interesting that you can re-sign or whatever it is. So sadly, the answer is not very exciting for me. I think the answer is no, but there's a couple forwards and wing guys, and maybe Glenn Robinson III is another name out there that you can get that can at least add a little bit of a spark and a little more toughness or something.
But for the record, you are in favor of signing Joakim to a veteran minimum and reuniting him with Donovan, right?
I am more than a fan of that idea. I think he should be a player coach. I think that he needs to be signed, not even sign him at the veteran minimum, but also make him a coach. I think in some games he could be wearing a suit on the bench. Other games he could be suited up if you need him to hop in there. Or he wears the suit, you know, the jersey under the suit. I'm 100% a fan of that idea, and I think it needs to happen today.
Excellent. That is the correct answer. Elias, we appreciate you stopping by the podcast. We appreciate your time. Just a reminder to all of our listeners to follow Elias on Twitter @Schuster_Elias. Get all of his great coverage and all of the Bulls coverage that Bleacher Nation does by following them on Twitter @BN_Bulls. One of the best Bulls follows on Twitter that's out there. Elias, to you and to everybody you work with over there at Bleacher Nation, keep up the great work. We look forward to more of your content as we get closer to the draft. And hopefully we'll talk again soon when we're maybe gearing up for some December basketball.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thanks again to Elias Schuster from Bleacher Nation for joining us, chopping it up about the Bulls. Go follow him on Twitter @Schuster_Elias. Follow us on Twitter @LockedOnBulls, @JordanCMalley, and @Bulls_Peck. You guys got thoughts, questions? We've got answers for you. Hit us up at 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com